This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4078 for Wednesday, the 20th of March, 2024. Today's show is entitled, Learning to Read Music, Part 2 Pitch. It is hosted by Ennis Tello and is about 14 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, the basics of pitch and musical notation.
Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. I'm Ennis Tello and today we're going to look at the second part of my guide to learning to read music. But before I begin, can I ask all listeners out there maybe to contribute a show? It's not difficult. If you've ever been on a Zoom or Jitsi call, you have the experience you need, believe it or not, to record a show. Any subject that might be of interest to geeks, hackers, or as I like to call them, right-minded individuals, is a good choice. Alternatively, if you're stuck for ideas, there's a list on the Hacker Public Radio website of podcast subjects that the audience are interested in to give you some inspiration. Now, learning to read music. In part one of this series that I recorded last year in episode, 3792, we looked at rhythm in music and how that's written down. In this episode, we're going to look at the second most important aspect of music after rhythm, and that is pitch. Once you have rhythm and pitch understood and maybe practiced a little bit for, say, a few hours, you'll be able to read music. It's really not that difficult. You can listen to this episode on learning to read pitch in music before the episode on rhythm if you like. The order you listen in doesn't really matter. Now, rhythm in music is described by the shape of the notes or the dots on the page. Black dots, for instance, become hollow for notes that last longer, or develop tails for notes that come quicker and are shorter. For pitch, things are a lot simpler. We begin with a stave or a staff. Typically, that's five parallel lines that stretch horizontally across a page. Blobs or dots, notes, that appear lower down those five lines sound lower, and those higher up in the five lines sound higher. If you count from a black dot or note that we put up against that bottom line of the five sitting just underneath it, so it just touches that lowest line, up to the note that sits above the topmost line, we get 11 notes. Here they are. But of course, there are higher notes than those we just heard, and lower as well. So to make those extra low and extra high notes legible, we use ledger lines. That's L-E-D-G-E-R. Let's use one ledger line below our stave, and one above the stave, or staff. Now we can start a bit lower and finish a bit higher, like this. If you're a visual person, you might want to have a look at the show notes to this podcast, diagram one in the handout. It's like being back at school, isn't it? Anyway, now we've got access to a broader range of notes, 15 in all. Now, we can't go on calling all the notes low one or high one, because it's rather confusing. Instead, we give each note a letter. In English language, we give each note a letter name, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And we repeat them. So those notes we just heard, those 15, we heard B, C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, A, B. So we started and finished on a B, and we used one about halfway up too. So here are those three B notes that we heard played together. You can hear they sound kind of the same. Because there are eight notes, count them. B is one, C is two, D is three, E is four, F is five, six is G, seven is A, and the eighth one is B. We call the gap between those Bs, in our case, an octave. Octa, eight, eight notes. Now, here's some terminology which I hope is self-explanatory. We began a scale from B to B, an octave higher, and then went up the scale further to a B note, an octave higher than that. And you'll hear the word octave a lot. In fact, there are two octaves between the first B, on which we began the scale, and the last B, two octaves higher. Incidentally, while I'm throwing terminology at you, I said we were using the notes A through to G in English. In German, we would use A, H, C, D, E, F, G, by the way. I won't bore you with the reasons why, but just so you know. Now, we've learnt the phrase scale, which is used to describe a run of notes close to each other for a while, either going up or down. An ascending scale is what we've heard. And here, dear listeners, is a descending scale from B, down two octaves. Those of you who are looking at the show notes will have seen at the beginning of each staff or stave, that's the five parallel lines, remember, a twirly figure. That's called the clef, French for key, and it gives musicians some idea of the general pitch of the notes they're going to be playing. The one we've used so far is called the treble clef. There's also a bass clef for low-sounding instruments, and an alto clef, which is usually only used by weirdos who play the viola, not the violin, the viola, so safe to ignore. Piano music tends to be written on two clefs at once, both bass and treble, which are bracketed together, because the 88 keys on a piano range from very low to very high, so pianists get to read two clefs simultaneously while they're reading music, which is why when you see a pianist out in the wild, it's often very difficult to make eye contact with them. While we're poking fun at musicians, drums and percussion tend to be written on a stave that comprises only of one line, or maybe three for the really complex instruments. Thus the old joke, what do you call a musician who had an anvil dropped on their head during childhood? Answer, yeah, a drummer. So, weak gags aside, we had some more vernacular in there. We now know about the stave, the clef at its beginning, ledger lines to make higher and lower notes more legible, and we learnt about a scale, a row of notes that descends or ascends by, let's call it, stepwise motion. Now, let's use our ears. Hearing a scale running from B to B sounds a bit odd. I mean, it's okay, but it's a little bit odd. Let's hear just one octave up and down. However, I'm now going to play you a scale, again, up and down one octave that starts and ends on C. We could say that the piece of music, well, a piece of music in inverted commas, that we just heard was in the key of C. It started and it ended on C, and it sort of seemed to gravitate around those first and last notes. Do you want to hear them again? Let's play them again. Now let's look at sharps and flats. Sharps and flats are symbols which are placed in front of any note in order to raise it or sharpen it by a half step or flatten it by a half note. A sharp looks like, for all you computer types, a hash or a crunch or a she, as in shebang. And a flat looks like a kind of stylized letter B. If you want to flatten a note, put the flat symbol in front of it. Or, if you want to sharpen a note, put a sharp symbol in front of it. I'm going to play now some of that scale from C to G, so five notes up and five notes back down without sharps or flats. A bit of vernacular, we'd say that scale has no accidentals. Now, let's hear that scale again, and I'm going to put a flat sign in front of the third note. So, instead of going C, D, E, F, G, I'm going to play C, D, E flat, F, G. And then back down, G, F, E flat, D, C. Now that's given our short scale quite a different sound. In fact, we've moved from a major key, a happy and upbeat key, to something approaching a minor key, which is dour, sad, and what plays when you think the superhero is being killed or a puppy gets ill. Now, let's really mangle it up a bit. I'm going to throw in another accidental just to make things even sadder. We'll keep that E flat, but also flatten the A. So I'm going to play C, D, E flat, F, G, A flat, B, C. You can see this written out in the show notes, and for those of you without the show notes in front of you, just imagine a really, really poorly puppy. So, sharps and flats are used to change the key of a piece of music. In fact, what we've just heard is a C minor scale, or a piece of really rather dull music in C minor. Keys tend to be major or minor. Minor, as a reminder, Dead Kittens. Major, Heroic Deeds by Leading Actors. Now, to make life easier for musicians, if a piece of music has most of the Fs in it, tend to be sharp, we put the F sharp symbol just next to the clef right at the beginning of the stave and repeat it on each stave down the page. We say this is a key signature, denoting that the piece, or a decent portion of it at least, is in this case, G major. You can see the clef followed by a key signature on the handout. And for those of you listening in Technicolor, here's a scale from G to G over two octaves using F sharps throughout. Finally, of course, we can play more than one note at once to make a chord, unless you're a percussionist. If we take the first, third, and fifth notes from our scale, we get a recognisable chord, like this. Or we can take those three notes again and put a flat in front of the middle one, that's the third note in the scale, remember, and it changes its tone from major to minor. Arguably, any three or more notes played together form a chord. Chords are terribly familiar. If you learn guitar, for example, you learn to play chords as one of the first things you do, usually. Chords are really useful to create things called cadences. A cadence is used to bring a piece of music to a close, or at least a pause, like this. So a cadence, in musical terms, is a product of pitch, not rhythm or pulse. Those of you out there talking about the release pattern of a piece of software, for instance, as adhering to a cadence, are talking about something different, specialist technical vernacular. Nothing to do with timing in music, however, cadence is about pitch. Learning to read music isn't necessarily difficult, but it does take practice. If you're learning, you'll see the note E on the stave in front of you, and then you have to translate that into how you'd play an E on your particular instrument. And seeing pitch and translating rhythm, sharpening or flattening notes, remembering key signatures, and a few other things we haven't really discussed over the course of these podcasts, means that you've really got to practice. And so they say, to reach a decent standard on most instruments, you need about 10,000 hours practice, which sounds like a lot, and it is. And that's why, of course, there are many more people who watch TikTok videos than learn an instrument. One's easy, one takes some dedication and skill, unless you want to be a drummer, which is probably easier than even watching TikTok. Right, I'll leave it there. I feel like these two shows have been like driving lessons and the driver's test at the end of those. You now know enough to be dangerous on your own out there. It's time to practice and get on with it. Thanks for listening. This has been Hacker Public Radio. I'm Enestello.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.